Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Welcome to Inside the 18 live from my desert bunker.
Whatever.
I'm Michael Magid. With me is Saskia Weber in a bunker in West Hollywood right now.
And Beverly Hills. Don't get that wrong.
All right. Beverly Hills. Sorry. Fancy there. Beverly Hills.
I'm kidding.
And joining us today, because he's got nothing better to do, is insider, but also professional goalkeeper, Eric Klonofsky from Toronto FC 2. Eric, what is up, dude?
How's it going? Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Eric.
Hey.
We're excited to have you on, man, because, you know, it's really cool lately during this time period, basically.
During the apocalypse?
Literally.
It's been fun. We've been having a lot of people reach out and saying, hey, you know, I'd love to come on the show. And I'm like, where were you when there wasn't an apocalypse going on? And I guess you had other things to do with your life. And now everyone wants to come on the podcast. But no, honestly, Eric's been a friend of the show. He's been a fan of the show for a while. And honestly, whenever a fan reaches out and they also have something to bring to the table, like, oh, I don't know, they're a professional goalkeeper who's played all over the world, you know, at a high level, trialed with Everton in the English Premier League. We're like, eh, I guess we can have that person on. I guess
we can make some room.
We'll think about it.
we can make some room. Saskia, how's the painting going, by the way?
It's going. It was good. It took 3 days for the living room.
Oh, geez.
It's
a lot of prepping is like the hardest part, you know, like taping everything down, covering windows, this and that and the other. And then we kind of took our time. It's a big living room. So,
by the way, this is a painting podcast for anybody who's interested in getting their living room done by World Cup winners. Yeah, feel free to reach out to Saskia.
Well, since we're in quarantine, you're just sniffing fumes for 3 days straight then, huh? Yeah, you can't leave.
That's why I was kind of jumping on here. Like, I was like, I gotta wake up.
No. Now, Eric, what's it like out there in quarantine in Canada? Are you in Toronto right now? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto. Yeah, I mean, I thought about going home, but border got locked down really quickly. We're just day to day like everybody else. Yeah, not much going on. We're doing like Zoom conference call workouts every morning with the team, which is great. But outside of that, lockdown, stay inside, go for a jog, go to the grocery store maybe, and then go home. Yeah. You can imagine how quickly something like coronavirus can spread in an apartment building.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's why I'm in the desert now. I was like in my apartment complex, like in West Hollywood, and I was like, yeah, I'm like, maybe I shouldn't be here. Maybe this is not the best place for me to be.
I made that comment this morning. I was like, that's why everybody's running out of New York. People are like, I'm like, because you're on top of each other. I used to live in the city.
Yeah, it's the epicenter.
You're like a 10,000 cruise ships parked in the middle.
Yeah. And if I were to have gone home because of this whole lockdown, I mean, I'm from right outside of New York in northern New Jersey. So I would just go home and then literally be in the epicenter. So I don't know if that's a better spot to be right now.
Yeah, but it's like a lot of people went to like out to Long Island. They like, I guess the Airbnbs were all rented in the Hamptons, oh, really? Like stuff like that. People are just like, I'm out.
So, yeah. Yeah, I know there's like an influx to like the shore right now. Like so many people are going down to like seaside and everything. But now this is turning into a Jersey podcast.
No. But
the Jersey Shore, it better be a
Hold on, hold on. Eric, you and Saskia, I always joke about this. Every time we have somebody on the show, I always tell Saskia, I'm like, why is everyone from the New Jersey, New York, Connecticut area in goalkeeping? Jersey. Why is literally everyone out there?
Oh my God, it's absurd. It's absurd how many numbers we have in just in like the MLS, how many New Jersey guys we have throughout the league. Yeah, it's absurd. But like, I don't know. Maybe it's the water. Maybe it's a bagel.
That's what I said.
I said it had to have been the water. Did you work with all those Jersey guys out there, like Paul Blodgett, Mulqueen, all those guys?
I worked for Paul Blodgett when I was in college, but I never worked with him. I lived in like the sticks up in North Jersey, and my dad would drive into the Bronx every day and work long, long hours. So driving down to Blodge in Flemington was a little bit tough when I was younger. So I just stuck with my goalkeeper trainer at TSF Academy, which is where I grew up. But Blodge, legend, I actually met Mulqueen this past offseason. A little bit of starstruck there, but no.
Oh, my God. Great.
Yeah.
Look at Sask.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
I was too, because like when Mulch like messaged on like the inside 18 message board or whatever, I was like, wait, Tim Mulqueen listens to this?
Yeah,
like,
and I was honor. Like,
are
you
that's kidding me? Are you kidding me? I was like,
that's
oh my gosh,
huge honor.
And Tim and Lodge were my coaches in college.
That's fantastic.
And Robin Copperthwaite, who's up in Canada. Yeah, so I.
That's hallowed ground in New Jersey. It's hallowed ground.
Yeah. are you rah-rah? I got to go. You know, I'm from Princeton, but even when after I graduated Rutgers, I came back and I stayed in New Jersey. And even when I was living in New York, I traveled into New Jersey just to train. So.
Yeah, I respect what Rutgers brings to the table, but I'm a Monmouth guy. So.
By the way, I'm not editing anything out of this podcast.
This is fantastic.
This is gold.
Everybody in New Jersey is going to be going crazy. We're divided right now.
Yes.
Speaking of good things, thank you for everybody who's been rating, reviewing, and subscribing on the podcast. We're at over 300 worldwide. I know a lot of you don't have many other things to do right now. So if you're looking for something to do, go on iTunes and just leave a review. 5 stars, you know, tell us why we're so amazing. We will follow you back when you leave that. Saskia will cough. You know, all those sort of things will happen. So actually, you know what? That's actually probably a bad thing to say this time.
No, it's okay.
So,
I'm fine, everybody.
Okay. I have bronchitis, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, you had a scare.
Yeah, I know. So. We can talk about that if you listen to my stand-up episode later today. That's right, guys. I have a stand-up show at 6 o'clock today, Pacific time. The interruption
plug.
Show, live on Twitch. Live on Twitch.
You can watch me paint today. I'll take musical requests in the background.
But honestly, guys, we appreciate all those reviews. Please keep sending those in. Honestly, if you don't leave a review right now during the quarantine, and you say that you're too busy, you're lying. You are lying. There's no way you don't have time to leave a review right now. Like I said, we'll follow you back. You're eligible for prizes. Also, leave your social media handle so we can follow you back. Otherwise, we don't know who you are. Shout out to Jesus, who's goalkeeping from afar. Thank you for finally letting us know who you were, because I didn't know for the longest time. And he's like, you keep using me as a joke on the show. I just want to let you know I'm a real person. Thanks, Jesus. Appreciate that. All right, let's get to some of these reviews, because I really appreciate this. This one comes from LA Galaxy fan 26. So I'm a big shock if he's an LAFC supporter. What if it was just like a troll move? And he's actually a big LAFC guy. And he goes, love the podcast. It's hard to stay sharp during this time, but the podcast and all of its hosts make it easier to get motivated and get better! !! And that's Simon Bank. Simon Bank is LA Galaxy fan 26. Actually, no, Simon. I'm actually going to be doing a virtual training session with Simon this weekend. So shout out to Simon right there. Simon is a DA keeper out here in the LA area. So thanks, man. Yeah. Oh, here's a good one. This one you can tell is from a parent, because it goes informative and easy to listen to. I don't know what that says about
me. I mean, like
us.
Easy listening, like 101, like, you know, the background, like, you know, soul music or like elevator music, easy listening.
Yeah. We're the easy listening station of goalkeeping content out there. We're not looking for that hard hitting, you know, content. And this one goes, my 10-year-old son is a goalie and it is hard to find information and constructive help anywhere. This podcast is the absolute best. The information and guests and everything that Michael and company, please use other people's names. I don't want people to think it's just my podcast about it, is not only useful for adults, but inspiring youth goalkeepers as well. Thank you for the info and interesting topics. We both are fans of the show! !! And that is from at Manuk Sunny Goalie. At Manuk Sunny Goalie. So thank you, at Manuk Sunny Goalie. Oh, actually, the mother's name is Seda Kesh. So Seda, thank you so much for that. I appreciate that. That that means a lot to us. So that's a
absolutely.
Yeah. That's a really cool review. All right. I'm going to lead one more, and this is coming from goalkeeper coach. So we're running the gamut here. Parents, youth goalkeepers, goalkeeper coaches. Next person's going to be somebody that's really into painting their living rooms. So we got everybody here. And this one goes, awesome goalkeeping podcast. This is a great podcast for both goalkeepers and coaches. I really enjoy that the content covers all aspects from the youth level, college, and professional level of the game. It is educational and fun to listen to. And as a goalkeeper coach, I highly recommend it. At Wesley One. So shout out to Wesley One, man. That's awesome. I mean, honestly, and I know Eric is a fan of the show, so he understands where we're coming from here. It's really cool that we have people from little kids all the way up to pro goalkeepers like yourself or pro goalkeeper coaches that are listening to the show. That means a lot to us, honestly. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And all right, we'll leave it at that. All right, let's move on into this next one right here before we go into the topic here. I want to give a shout out to Sarah Jane Tobin out of the UK area. Her son's video blew up on Twitter, went viral. We were chatting a little bit today, and he was, we put out the whole call to action last week on kids, show us what you're doing to stay sharp, during the quarantine all over the world. And we've been getting a lot of really cool videos. We're going to be putting up a montage in the next couple of days. And honestly, her son's one went viral. Literally, like, David De Gea reached out and, like, a bunch of big-time goalkeepers and stuff were commenting on it. So obviously that's not the reason why he did it. He did it because, he's trying to stay sharp. But it was really cool. And Eric, I know you saw the video, so why don't you explain a little bit to people who might not have seen it what it was all about.
Yeah, it's literally him in his backyard with a mini goal, and he's got the wall next to his fence, and he's standing on the side of the goal, hits the ball off the wall, runs to the left or to the right, and dives. So it's a little makeshift goalkeeper training in his backyard. So a lot of respect for that.
Yeah.
No joke.
I mean, that's big time, man. He's a little guy out there. He's doing his own service, and he's hitting it off the walls. And then it's like he made a rebounder on his own, which was just so amazing.
It's like
so,
kind of another level of wall work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Next level wall work. Now, I will say to her son, though, try to keep the flashy stuff out, though, dude. Come on. You don't need, like, the tip-over saves and stuff like that when you're going off the wall. Keep it clean, footwork handling, all that sort of stuff.
Make sure you set those feet.
Make sure you set the feet. I'm joking. I mean, obviously, as a kid, it's fun to be jumping around. And honestly, just for him to be staying active and focused on
something.
The game.
He's doing something.
That's all we want right now. That's all we want right now. So let's get today's topic, guys. Today's topic is alternative opportunities for goalkeepers. A lot of people, I get this question all the time from goalkeepers, and it's about where should I go play? Should I go here? Should I go there? Whether it's college, high school, DA, Europe, South America, Israel, all that sort of thing. And a lot of people are not willing to get out of their comfort zone and look at different opportunities. And I thought this was a really cool opportunity because all three of us right here chose some alternative paths when it came to playing in regards to locations. Obviously, Sasuke, at the time, Japan was one of the best leagues in the world, so that was the right opportunity for you. But culturally, it was a completely, 180 for you, so that was a little bit of a transition. So first off, let's talk about, for some of the parents out there who are listening who might not be familiar, when we're talking about the main destinations that Americans generally look for to go overseas. Would you say it's predominantly Europe?
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think to back up a little bit, I think for me going to Japan, but I was, I had parents and I was brought up, my mother's Dutch and everything. So, and they're like, go travel, do everything. But that was part of it. I loved being in Japan. Like, I loved challenging myself. Another culture, another language. And I was there to play pro, but it was awesome. Like, and I think that, you have to step outside your comfort zone. You have to. And, a good, like 80% of Americans don't have their passport. I get that. Well, get it. And and when we can travel, I would encourage it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't limit yourself.
Eric, why do you think, because I bet you that was, I mean, obviously, you went to Everton and you went on trial over there, if you have that type of opportunity, of course you take it and that sort of thing. But at that time period of your life, when you were younger, is that really where you were like, well, it's either the US or Europe?
Yeah, I don't think I even had like a thought process of anywhere else, because you go on TV when you're growing up and you're watching Fox Soccer Channel at the time when I was growing up.
I love it. They have
stuff all over the place, but I remember watching K-League, J-League games, Australian League games. But for whatever reason, it was just like Europe is like the goal. You know, Europe is the epitome of high-level soccer. So if you had aspirations for being a professional, Europe is where you wanted to end up eventually.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was playing, we didn't have the option. Like back then, England didn't have a league. France didn't have a league. Spain didn't have a league. Nobody had a league. I mean, Sweden had a league. That was an option. And Japan. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. That's tough for sure.
Man, wow. That just
so got... imagine all those people wanting to try to play. And yeah,
I can't even imagine, Saskia. I can't even imagine
the comp. Supply and demand.
I mean,
I didn't make my team at first.
You didn't?
No, they came here. They had a tryout, an open, like kind of an invitation tryout. Yeah. Because they were moving from the second division up to the L League, and it was a William and Mary, and everybody came. Like everybody that wanted to go play overseas, play pro, went. And they at first didn't want to keep her.
Really?
Right? And then,
you didn't be like, excuse me, I play for the United States of America. We're one of the best teams in the world.
They wanted field players, and then the one field player, I think it was. I knew her, decided not to go not step outside of her comfort zone. And then,
Now, would you guys say that the whole Europe thing, I mean, obviously, you know, in regards to when you were playing, Saskia, you know, is a little bit of a different time, but nowadays, you know, on the women's side as well too, do you think it's because of a culture, because of the cultural similarity that's why a lot of kids go, it's either United States or Europe? Because
absolutely.
Even if it's a different language, they still feel like the culture is similar.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so much easier to get along and to, it's not easy. It wasn't easy my first year in Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, I had interpreters and stuff, but when I was on my own, I had to figure it out. Going to Europe, you go to England, everybody speaks English. You go to 90% of the countries in Europe, everybody can speak. You can find people who speak English. Everything's in Romanization. So absolutely.
Yeah, I think just relating to that from my year in Israel, like it was just so tough to try and figure out life. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of it comes from, you know, just wanting to figure it out and wanting to go for it and not being afraid to fail. And when I talk to young kids or maybe guys that are thinking about going to Europe and they have options in maybe a smaller country that maybe the first language isn't English, it's a lot of, you know, what if this, what if that, what if this? And I'm just like, go and figure it out.
Yeah,
right?
Figure it out.
Go and figure it out and you'll be better for it, right? If you go and you're not afraid to fail and you just figure it out, you're going to be better for it when the next opportunity comes.
Yeah, and the next opportunity won't faze you.
Yeah, like it's going to feel like less of a punch it's really that hard. Yeah.
But by the way, breaking news, guys, we just got a comment on here on the live feed, and it's from a very obscure goalkeeper in the United States. His name is Omar Zini. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of this guy before. He's kind of a hack. Anyway, he says Eric would have been great in Liga MX. What do you say? What do you say to that, dude? Liga MX.
Why are we speaking in past tense? I'm confused. Would have been. What does that mean? What, is that a jab? Like, is that an undertone?
Maybe because
I'm 25, Omar. What's going on? Like, it still exists, right? I could still go there right now. Or am I done? I guess I just retired and I didn't know.
So that leads to another question right here. Okay. So thank you, Omar, for leading us into this path right here. What about Latin America, South America? A lot of goalkeepers, look, there's a lot of opportunities in a lot of those countries, and a lot of goalkeepers, I almost use the term poo-poo, but like, now I sound like my dad, and I'm like, I don't want to sound like I'm 60 something years old. So they go, I don't know about that. You know, I don't think that's the right league for me and sort of thing. And I actually took that opportunity. I actually went to South America and I gave it a shot out there, mainly because I wasn't getting shots here in the United States because people looked at me and they went, no. In South America, they're like, oh, you're about average height for us. Sure. Well, let's do this. We can make this happen. I think there's a lot of people that have this stigma against South American countries, especially as goalkeepers, to go over there and try to play. And Do you think a lot of that is just because there's just a lot of negative connotations to like, oh, the goalkeeper training is not that great, or like it's a different style of play, and like, oh, it wouldn't work for me because I was trained in the traditional goalkeeping European style and clean hands and all that sort of thing. Like, do you guys think there's any
So are we validity insinuating to that? That South American goalkeepers don't have clean hands?
I'm saying that's what a lot of people say, and that's why I want to bring this dialogue into conversation. We ask the rough questions here, Eric. That's how we do it.
Oh, what I'm saying is when I was growing up, still growing up, but the South American coaches that I had one really, really good coach from Venezuela, and he was always like, it's dangerous there. So, I mean, I would like the energy was always like, oh, going there would be dangerous. And then I find myself in Israel and making sure that I knew where my bomb shelter was. So that's a little ironic, but yeah, no, if a South American club were to reach out, I would put real thought into it. I can't speak for everybody, but I would say that more often than not, I don't know how many times South American clubs are reaching out to bring American goalkeepers in.
Because honestly, I think it goes both ways, to be honest with you. I think there's also a stigma in a lot of those countries in regards to North American goalkeepers, in regards to the United States or Canada, yeah. In regards to like, no, that's not, they're going to hate it here, or, you know, they're not right for what we want, and that sort of a thing. So I think it goes both ways. I don't think it's just a one-sided argument one way or the other. I will say, by the way, speaking of the Venezuelan thing, I did go to Venezuela. I did. When everybody else was trying to leave Venezuela, I was like, oh, cool, opportunities. So yeah. I went to Venezuela to try to go play over there. And honestly, there's a lot of cool things. I mean, some things maybe I disagreed with in regards to, it was a little bit different from the way I had been trained in the past. But there was also a lot of things that I learned there that I had never even thought of before. Nobody had ever worked with me on my long form distribution outside of just a straight punt or a goal kick, really. And that was something that was a lot of our training in Venezuela, was side volley and touch into a long distance ball, a long pass, those sorts of things, as opposed to just a lot of direct play. So that's something I learned from there. Playing balls into spaces, honestly, like a lot of pairing work, because I'd been taught a lot of times, especially as a younger goalkeeper, catch the ball, catch the ball, catch the ball. And as you know, Eric, and as you know, Saskia, you know, playing at the higher levels, can't always catch the ball. You can't always catch the ball.
I always catch the ball.
Okay. I know.
I think for me, I mean, you have to prioritize making decisions, right?
So, I'm kidding.
No. I would say if we're thinking that, like, if the epitome of the sport on the men's side, at least for the time being, is Europe right now, or the bigger countries in Europe, the England, Germany, Spain, those kind of countries, if my goal is to make it to one of those countries and be a real player over there, why, if I'm going to make a move, why would I not go to one of the smaller countries to get me to one of those bigger countries, instead of going to maybe a good country in South America in terms of playing, but is it getting me closer to playing in a La Liga or a Bundesliga or a Premier League? You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. No. I agree with that.
I mean, that's a really good point, because the thing is that we were talking, a few weeks ago, we had, a friend of ours on the show who, and I don't want to name the person, you know, because I don't know what's going on in regards to the situation with contracts after this whole quarantine. Yeah. And I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but let's just say that she was offered contracts in NWSL for this coming season. Mm-hmm. And, she was told what her position would be. And then there was a team in Europe that came in with a better offer, and that she could come in and be the number one over there. And she is planning on taking that offer to be the number one. And another friend of ours had that same situation, Fallon Tolles-Joyce, mm-hmm. who plays for Stade de Reims in France. And I think I said that properly. And she went over there, became the number one. They got promoted to Ligue 1, and now she's playing against PSG. And now she's put herself back into the fold where, you know, she can either stay there and keep moving up the ladder in Europe, or she could probably come back to NWSL in a much more advantageous position for her career, you know? So you got to look at it. Only one goalkeeper can play at a time. So you got to look at what's the best opportunity for you.
Yeah. The situation makes a difference more often than not. It's going to be different for every single person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that, of course, but I don't want to talk, you know, the opportunities aren't as prevalent for across South America. you know, with leagues and stuff like that. But I still think it is that switch. Everything's growing towards Europe and around Europe if you're not here in America. You know, so, although the L League is in Japan is starting up again.
Yeah, aren't you going to be like one of the ambassadors to kind of get stuff going back out? No, that's good. Hold on, you should be proud of that. You don't need to be like
proud of that.
Okay.
No, I am proud of that. But it was a great league. But like you were saying about training, there's a lot of different things I learned there. That different styles. You know, training was 4 hours sometimes.
I've seen some of the Japanese training sessions. I mean, wow, there's some stuff I've never seen before. I'm not gonna lie.
But they're not. It's not 4 hours of high intensity.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like an hour of juggling. Like there's nothing.
An hour of juggling.
No, I'm being a little.
No, I got you.
They have the technical goalkeeping app over there, so
they slow everything down and you know.
We just got a question right here that was asked on the Facebook Live right here, and it's a
that Eric, was a long time ago, by the way. They might not do that anymore.
Eric, what was the feedback from Everton when you went over there on trial, and what did they think about your game? And I don't know if this person wants you to just divulge all the information. Are they trolling you, or are they trying to really?
I mean,
get
we're pretty far removed from my time over there. So I think it's
open totally
field.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. So no, it was probably like a little over 4 years now. It was December into January of 2016. So right after college. So I remember initially I was supposed to go over there from December 15th to the 20th. And then after like 2 or 3 days, they said, we're going to keep you indefinitely right now. We're just going to keep you on. We don't know how long your trial is, but we're just going to keep you and see what happens. So that first week goes by. And then I remember, so one of my best friends from Monmouth, my university, was getting his master's over at the University of Nottingham. And we were walking through Liverpool on one of the off days. And I get a call from my agent. And he's like, you did it, buddy. They want to sign you. And we literally just start hitting each other in the middle of the road. Like, nice. This is crazy. Like, how is this happening right now? So, that didn't happen. So,
it's all good. I've been in that same situation before where something big was about to happen and I've jumped the gun.
Oh yeah.
I was like, oh dude, it's happening. And then like, I've told everybody. And then literally a week later, like, hey, what happened to that thing? I'm like
yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, I didn't tell everybody because I had gotten gut checked like that one too many times before that. Yeah. So I think all of us get gut checked like that at a certain time or the other. But yeah, 5-6 days in, I get a call from my agent. We're hanging out downtown and they say they want to sign me and they're going to keep me indefinitely. So what it was going to look like is I was probably going to be like the 3 for the under 23s and they were going to sign me for a 6-month contract for like pennies. And I was like, I don't care. House me and sign me to Everton. I'll figure it out from there. And, I thought like, I don't care how much they're going to pay me. This is the best opportunity. Like when is a team this big or a club this big? And explaining that to my family, I was like, it's Everton. And my mom's like, what's that? What's an Everton?
You're like the toffees. She's like, oh, I love that candy.
Yeah, I love candy.
Everton toffees are amazing. I think I have it in the pantry right now.
Yeah. So it continues on, right? I'm still there. And I guess I didn't really hear anything else, but maybe in we're in negotiations, let's say, at this point. I stay until, like, January 3rd. So the MLS Combine was January 5th. So in the meantime, I was trying to get a passport, right? I was trying to find a way so I could get a worker's permit over in England. And I'd never been capped for the national team. So getting a worker's permit in the Premier League, within a Premier League club, is hard if you've never been capped. So my great-grandfather was a citizen of Antigua and Barbuda in the Caribbean.
What?
Antigua and Barbuda. In Barbuda? I hope I'm not saying that wrong. But in the Caribbean. And there was like a really small chance, like if my grandma got her citizenship, that my mom could get it and then I could. And then I would immediately get called up to the national team. And then I would be able to get a worker's permit in England. So obviously that's going to take way longer than a January transfer window. So you're
the most glorified goalkeeper in Antigua and Barbuda history. Is that how that works?
I don't know. I'm I'm not really. I never got my citizenship. Yet, oh, okay. So yeah.
I got my Dutch citizenship.
I'm not saying that it's not in the works, but but I don't know. There was like an issue because I guess they had a lot of flooding there. So finding my great grandfather's birth certificate was super difficult. But we ended up finding his like baptismal certificate. So whatever. So we couldn't actually get that done. So because I couldn't get that that citizenship, it made it astronomically more difficult for me to sign for Everton. So at that time, I needed to make a decision because if I couldn't sign for Everton, MLS Combine starts on January 5th. And this is all breaking down on like January 3rd at like 11 a.m. after training. So I'm like, what do I do? I'm talking to my agent. I'm like, I thought we were going to be here. I didn't even think we were going to the Combine. We got to be in LA in like 24 hours, don't we? And I'm in Liverpool right now. So I found like the next flight I could. I'm running on fumes right now financially because obviously still a college kid, not making any money. The MLS only covered flights, domestic flights to the Combine. So I had to pay for my flight that day, which thank God for my mother, wonderful mother. So she paid for my flight from Manchester. I think I flew out of Manchester to Philadelphia. Manchester to Portugal, Portugal to Philadelphia.
What?
I did a 19-hour layover overnight on the 24th.
Why?
On the 24th, because it was the only flight and I needed to be in LA in less than...
Wouldn't it be quicker for you just to go down to London?
I don't know. For whatever reason, this was the situation. So I ended up sleeping in like a restaurant in the Lisbon airport for like 19 hours. And then I landed like the morning of the 25th in Philadelphia at like 6 a.m. My mom picked me up from Philly, drove me back to North Jersey, drove me to Bridgewater where she was living at the time. I slept for like 4 hours and then we drove back to the Philadelphia airport and I flew to LA. And then the next day I was playing in the Combine.
Wow. Dude, the fact that you even were able to stand and not...
I was like, and keep in mind that I was just in Liverpool. I was just in Europe and it's 6 hours ahead of LA. So my game was at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon and it was like 10 o'clock at night for me.
Okay. You were like yawning in the goal.
Yeah. It was like, I was just like, and everybody's like, why don't you think you did good at the Combine? And I was just like, I don't know. Like
I don't
know. Have you ever heard of the word punch drunk? It was kind of like, was I there? I'm not sure. But yeah, it was a wild time. Thinking back to it, Combine, what an experience. Probably should have missed the first couple days. But yeah, that whole experience was wild. I was super close to Everton. Ended up just shooting myself in the foot with the Combine. And yeah, you roll with the punches.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what else can you do?
I mean, look, honestly, and I think that's a good story for a lot of the kids out there to hear that is that, you know, obviously you're at this complete high of Everton to this low of not performing at the level that you wanted to at the Combine on extenuating circumstances. And first off, I think it's pretty messed up that a lot of the scouts didn't even take that into consideration in regards to, you know, from a drafting standpoint, like they should have done their homework and done their research and understood how the body physiologically handles air travel from an extensive amount of time like that. It's not like you really were able to stay fit during that craziness, all of that, diet-wise, all of that stuff, and just anxiety too. So,
I wasn't going to, I had meetings with a handful of the MLS teams during, and I wasn't going to go in there and like make excuses for mistakes. Right. I was at that point, I was just like, let me just play the cards I'm dealt and at least stand with my character. Right. If there's anything right, I'll just be like, absolutely, you know what? These are the mistakes. I made the mistakes. I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for whatever I did or why I.
Because you're also under the assumption that nobody else had an issue. Like,
everybody is dealing with nonsense. Everybody's dealing with nonsense. Right. So I'm not
from a funeral. You don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm not going to go in there and make excuses. I'm not making excuses for myself now. I didn't perform to my potential, in my opinion. And that is what it is. And I have to wear that.
But you learned from it.
For sure. For sure.
You know, Saskia, how was your first combine performance in the U.S. when the league was starting up?
I didn't have to go to combine.
You didn't have to go to combine. Okay, you were too big time. Okay.
We were allocated to teams.
Oh, you're allocated. You guys were basically DPs. You guys were DPs basically.
We were all the founding members, so we were automatically placed on teams.
That's right. Great.
Yeah.
I think honestly, thinking back, if I just didn't go to the combine, there probably would have been like this huge allure of like what's going on with Eric that I probably wouldn't gotten drafted. Like Tyler Miller, who just like didn't show up and just like went to Germany and
Because he was playing like in the Onsenbuch or something, right?
Don't show up, and then it would have been like, I guess we have to draft him because if we don't, like, we don't want that bad press. Somebody has to, like, imagine if we just let him go. I don't know. Something to think about.
I mean, we were lucky that way. It's a long story. Ended up with Philly, but I wanted to be in New York. I ended up being traded to New York, so that made me happy. But, I think we had a camp at the same time they were having the combine in Florida. So we were kind of at the we're hanging out at the combine. I'm watching people like try out for the teams.
God, that is like the cool kids watching like the nerdy kids like trying to make it to the popular table, and you're like, oh my god, look at you guys.
How cute.
So and so, I might be willing to let her sit next to me.
It was such a small community. Well, not a small community, but it was. We knew everybody, so it was good to see everybody. Yeah. And all they were so hyped up. I mean, we finally had a pro league. And everything, so it was cool, but I didn't try out.
By the way, Stan Anderson, another hack out there in the goalkeeping community. He from Camp Shutout. Shout out to Stan from Camp Shutout. He says, "Nice jersey, Saskia." So we're getting some really solid comments coming in here.
Oh, my jerseys. Okay, yeah. So this one with 99 on it. It's actually my Dodgers jersey.
Oh.
So I threw the first pitch out.
Oh, that's cool.
LA Dodgers. Isn't that neat? So, and then, that's my USA jersey.
That's just my USA jersey where I won a World Cup. You know,
There's a story behind this from our last podcast because me and Michael didn't have anything behind us.
No, we had nothing.
We had nothing. So we were like just sitting here. So we had to amp it up a little bit.
Stan had this incredible background.
It was like gloves signed by everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So we were like, we kind of got to step it up. So now Michael's got the Inside the 18 banner.
Yeah. Which I had my brother-in-law help me put that stuff up because he's like 6'2". And I needed help getting those things up there because I was on a chair like trying to do it by myself. And I was like, where's Hale? I need Hale to do this for me.
So that's my 90. It's I threw the first pitch out last year before the World Cup.
So
that's cool.
It was a little nerve. I threw a strike.
There you go.
I have no idea what the topic of this episode is at all. It's been all over the place.
Well, somebody said they like my jersey.
No, those are cool. All right, getting back to this right here. I want to talk about smaller leagues and finding opportunities. So obviously, things didn't work out the way you wanted them to out here, Eric. And then you ended up going to Israel, which talking about a 180. Talk about thinking outside the box, which is, I think, what I want to call this episode is like thinking outside the box, you know, in regards to goalkeeping. What attracted you to Israel? Had you ever thought about the Israeli league? What did you learn over there that you brought back to the United States? Other than that, the announcers are really excited every single time the ball gets anywhere past midfield. They go
crazy.
Well,
it's all the great defending over there that they just know that something bad's going to happen. what attracted me to Israel? Did I ever think about going there? I know, like, me and my my siblings always used to think about going on Birthright, but I never used to think about going and playing over in Israel. So how I ended up in Israel was I was playing for DC United, and I had an agent reach out to me named Itamar Kainan, and he's out of Dallas, but he's Israeli. And he texts me and he's like, "Hey, I got your number from so-and-so, one of your teammates. I think I have an opportunity for you. I would like to get on a phone call." And I was like, "Yeah, sure. I'm open to listening. I'm always open to listening." So I get on the call with him and he's like, "Hey, Eric, what's up, man? Are you Jewish?" And I'm just like, I mean, it depends on your definition. My dad's Jewish. And he's like, "I think there's a chance that you could get an Israeli passport." And I was just like, okay, that's something that is relatively interesting to me. So I'll keep that in mind the next time I'm out of contract or whatever it is. So what ends up happening is I have a knee surgery. I had a meniscal repair.
Dude, is your story should be a documentary, Eric. My God, you got everything.
Oh yeah, I
got
the memoir tab. It's behind this. No, I studied journalism in college, so I'm planning on writing the memoir. So if you want to help me with that, I'd appreciate it.
Dude, yeah, absolutely. I think we should make the movie.
Yeah, right.
Eric Klinovsky's story.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody would watch, but I end up. I had a meniscal repair, which is like a 50-50 chance it works. I recovered for like 6 months. I stay in touch with Itamar. He's done deals with my current agent before about moving guys to Israel. So we all stay in touch, and it turns into this thing where I'm like, yeah, like put out some feelers, see what the situation was. I was in a situation in DC my rookie year where I played one game the whole year. I was behind Bill Hamid or Steve Clark and fighting with Travis Ward the whole time. Some amazing goalkeepers. But my thing was like, and I think this should be all goalkeepers' things. It's like I needed to get games, and I didn't care what it looked like. Right? I needed to get games. I didn't play for a year. I hadn't been a backup in a long time, and I had no professional games under my belt. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I played. That's what we talked. We constantly are saying, like, if you're coming into something and you're going to be third and stuff, now with all the opportunities, even for women, go somewhere else.
Like, yeah, figure it out.
Look at England. Look at France. Look somewhere else. Get
Why not?
The games in.
Yeah.
Get the games in.
Yeah.
And if your team's not willing to release you too, I think if you feel that it's hurting your development, talk to them about a loan. Because if they really believe in you and they really want you to develop and become a better player, they're going to be open to it if they feel
that. Yeah, if you're not going to be playing and they loan you, then you're getting games in. When they want you back, you've got the games under your belt.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that depends if they believe in you, right? Or do they just need you to make up the numbers, right? It depends club by club, situation by situation. I'm not sure that I would have gotten a loan my rookie year, unfortunately, for whatever reason. But – like I said, I needed to get games. I didn't care what it looked like. So they came with a deal, and I was just like, yeah, let's do it. Like, I'm young. I don't have any baggage right now. Let's go for it, right? So there's no kids. There's no car payment. There was a car payment. RIP to that car. I missed that car. But, so I was like, I don't care what it looked like. So I went to a club that had just gotten promoted from the third division. And it was an experience. We had four managers in 7 months. There were times where probably like two or three times a week, we didn't have water to shower afterwards.
Wait, what? Seriously?
Yeah, we just run out of water. There's no water. Our athletic trainer would like smoke cigarettes while he would stretch people out. I would be catching volleys and smelling cigarettes, and I was just like, this is great. It's like, breathe in, exhale, catch.
This is unreal. This literally sounds like a movie.
We didn't have ice for like half the season. We didn't have ice. I saw some really big rats. There was a lot of good. There was a lot of good. I met some great people. Met some of my best friends. One of my best friends actually that I went to high school with. was getting his master's. I only go to places where my best friends are getting their master's, if you're getting that in the storyline. So one of my other best friends was getting his master's in Israel. And yeah, I went over there and he made transitioning to life in Israel a lot easier. But yeah, we were an underfunded team. We were owned by, the way it was described to me, like the Justin Timberlake of Israel. Like, so this is literally how my goalkeeper coach explained it. Like, picture the biggest musician in America. That was who owned my club. So the biggest musician in Israel owned Apoel Marmarek, the club that I was at, and that's where all the funding came from. But there was like,
Are you sure it wasn't a team
like,
in my?
So when his like single didn't drop or didn't make anything, that's when you didn't have water.
No, I mean, we just didn't have water in general. We literally, there were times where, no, like our training field / stadium was literally the only patch of grass like in the city. So like there were like houses like all built up around the training ground. And there was like a water hose. So like when we didn't have showers, like water coming down from the showers, there would be times where guys would be like standing on the field showering like out in the field, and I only lived like
what?
I only lived like two blocks away.
I say, couldn't you just go home and shower?
Yeah, so I just went. Well, Israel is like the size of New Jersey, so when guys change clubs, they don't move. So most of my team lived within 2 or 3 hours away. Like it's just not a thing. They just don't really move when they change clubs. Yeah, so like we had like six guys from Haifa. And we were like 30 minutes south of Tel Aviv. So that's like 2.5 hours trip on like a train. So going home wasn't always. So long story short, sometimes I would have like six guys in my living room sleeping over. but that's just kind of, it's crazy. I remember going to like, they bought like this house in the middle of the season because it was like, we have all these guys from Haifa. Like we need to help them out somehow. And they bought like this house that was like not finished. And, it was crazy. Like, have you ever seen like a chair that's like next to like a pool or a beach that has like a pad on it that's like 6 feet long? That was their beds, and they just put that on the ground, and literally like sleep on that. Which was, I walked in there and they were like, Eric, if you want to move in here and be with everybody else, I was just like, I'm okay.
No,
I'm very okay. But
Eric, I have a question for you. How long was Apoel playing in my men's league? Because I'm pretty sure your team is in my men's league. I think I played against you guys. I think I know that owner. I think he hangs out at the Aroma Cafe in Encino.
I'll go on. That's him. No, Israel is a wild time. There's so many random ways we could go with Israel, but I could write a book.
By the way,
I think it's so important. I think the perspective of going there, and then now like being at TFC, I'm just like, it takes so much for me to be like in a bad mood.
Dude, you must be so appreciative of being in a pro environment.
Yeah, like we'll have like academy kids that are just like, oh, this place is that, this place is this, and I'm just like, we have water.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what we talked about putting yourself out there and doing it. Because, you know, and the experience, like in Japan, we practice on dirt. You know, we used to take this giant metal rake, and I would have like one of my littler, small, tinier, like 5'2 Japanese girls stand on the end of the rake, and Tammy and I would pull it across the front of the goal to like crunch up the dirt a little bit so it wasn't so
perspective.
Hard.
Perspective, right?
Yeah, so when I come here and people make comments about fields or stuff like that, and I sometimes just shake their head. I'm like, you have no idea. Like,
it's just perspective. No. It's just perspective.
Oh, and I can't even imagine Sasuke at UCLA just somehow. I don't want to say they're entitled, but let's just say they haven't experienced some of the hardships that some of us have.
I think the majority of the younger kids coming up today haven't experienced what we experience, even here in the U.S., like where we used to practice and play and the fields we used to play on and what we did and didn't have, you know? Yeah. So, but I think putting yourself out there and going through that, like you said, it takes a lot for you to be in a bad mood.
Yeah, like, it does. I'm like such an optimist. That's just like
me too.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to try and go carve out a career in lower division football and not be an optimist, right? If you're going to think about it, like, it's too easy to just be a pessimist. It's just so easy to be a pessimist. So
honestly, a lot of people, I think they just don't have that. Look, when you play, I played lower division, you know, obviously Eric, you know, you've played lower division. Saskia probably never played lower division. She's too good. But, you know, it takes a certain amount of tenacity and belief in yourself to keep going.
Sure. Hey, I played on the worst. You know, I played on the worst team in Japan.
Okay, there you go. I guess
I had just come up from the second.
Oh, that's division. Right. So you did play in the lower division. So yeah,
No, it was
just a tough team.
Okay.
It was just stayed at the bottom when I joined it.
Yeah.
So
no, there's so much stuff.
So what advice do you give to goalkeepers that are looking to head kind of outside of their box? Whether it's language, whether it's the cultural aspect, whether it's the pay issue, because I know this is obviously a big issue in a lot of countries is the whole pay issue. What do you say in regards to that? How do they handle all this?
Yeah, I would say make sure that you're working with agents that you trust. I mean, it's hard. I know there's a stigma around agents, but the agents that I work with are two of the best agents that I've come across. So I would say in terms of trying to find the right situation for you, definitely work with people that you trust in terms of getting over there. That being said, understand that everybody who's been great has had to sacrifice at some point. So whether it's myself or Tim Howard or Steve Clark or Jay Demerit, or everybody's got to go through something at some point, right? Yeah. And whether it's Israel, whether it's going to Norway, there's going to be nonsense you're going to have to deal with. There's going to be hard times you're going to have to deal with. The time change, the cultural change, maybe a goalkeeper coach that you don't really gel with well. But I could go on and on about issues, but if you harp on those issues and you're not going into it with the right mindset, then I think that's really where the issue comes from. I think if you go into any situation with a, you know what, no matter what happens, I'm going to get better from this. I'm going to learn, I'm going to grow, and I'm going to be better for it. I think you're going to come out on the right side. Whether you're successful in terms of winning championships and trophies and whatever it is during your time abroad, I think if you go into it with the right mentality and you really make a commitment to getting better every day, I think it'll be worth it and you'll grow not only as a goalkeeper, but as a person too.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head in regards to the right mindset. You know, Saskia and I, we've discussed this before, is that if you come in with a negative mindset to any situation, you're going to fail as a goalkeeper because the majority of our game is mental.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
You know?
Yeah. You just can't be high maintenance.
Oh yeah.
You can't, especially going overseas, going to different cultures. Like, don't make yourself a problem. You know, just be there to play soccer.
Yeah. Yeah. Manage your own expectations, right? I knew going into it, because I was talking to the Israeli agent, Itamar. I was talking to him. He's like, I know I'm going to have to deal with nonsense. I know there's going to be whatever. I mean, thinking about it now, if I said this to an academy kid that's at, like, I don't know, pick a big MLS club and said, yeah, I had to pay for my own gym membership and then I would ride my bike 2 miles to go to the gym after training. Or if I wanted to, they had free weights that were over in the barn over there next to the garbage for the city that I could go lift at, right? So it's like, manage your expectations. You know that, like, no matter what, wherever you go, there's going to be a transitioning period. There's going to be nonsense that you're going to have to deal with. So how are you going to deal with it? Like, it's that old cliche of you're not defined by what happens to you, but how you react to what happens to you.
I think that's important for all kids to hear, regardless of whether they're trying to play professionally or whether they're just trying to, you know, they move to a different club or move to college. I think, you know, that's a big culture shock as well too, is when kids go from their club team to college, because it's a completely new environment. And a lot of times if they've played at a big DA club and then they go to a smaller college, well, the facilities might not be at the same level as they were when they were playing at the big DA club. All right. I want to bring up this right here, Eric. I want to talk about countries and leagues that, that a lot of goalkeepers don't look at, that are, might be untapped and solid places for goalkeepers to look at. So are there any countries or leagues out there that if you're a goalkeeper, maybe in USL one or two, maybe even in the championship and not getting your chance and, you know, MLS doesn't look like it's going to be coming your way. And it looks like you, in order to move on, you're going to have to go somewhere else. What countries would you look at? Like Scandinavia? Is that the
number Yeah, one? I think obviously the countries you say first are Scandinavia, right? You say the Norway, Sweden, Denmark, maybe Finland, right? I have friends that are playing that are goalkeepers in I think all of those countries, but it's maybe one that you might expect, but Northern Ireland. I don't know if you guys have kept up or know of a guy named Bobby Edwards. But he's another New Jersey goalkeeper who didn't really have much coming out of college. And I'm like in my head and our whole friend group was like, Bobby, you're good enough, man. Like you're good enough. You just need one chance. And I remember talking to some like agents and even some USL teams trying to say like, hey, like this kid's really good. Like, would you have any interest in bringing him in for like a trial at least? And they're like, yeah, you know, we have this guy. And Bobby goes over to Northern Ireland and kills it in the Northern Ireland second division, kills it for like 6 to 8 months. And then he finds himself on trial with Blackburn, Burnley, sitting next to Joe Hart in the locker room. And it's like, well, we were all saying it, but nobody was listening.
Right.
So now it's like every MLS, like how many MLS teams was he getting contacted by? And now he's on a X number of years guaranteed at FC Cincinnati, which is an amazing club. So it's that whole thing of like go in with a growth mindset, bet on yourself, and it's going to be – you're going to benefit from it. So Northern Ireland is a place I think is going to be a real hotbed maybe for guys like Bobby and guys like that for whatever reason fall through in the first stage, but then go abroad, bet on themselves, and then come out better for it. I have another friend, another New Jersey guy, Michael Lansing.
Okay, so why doesn't why doesn't everyone in the United States who's looking for a goalkeeper just go to New Jersey?
Exactly.
And just don't
I didn't
even
say
don't,
it, you said
don't, it. You don't even need to. They don't even have to be playing in goal. Just like find a random person in New Jersey, grab them, and go like.
Decent
hey,
chance.
You're a goalkeeper.
There's a decent chance he's going to be okay.
Exactly.
So Mike didn't have much coming out of college, played at Bucknell. Fantastic goalkeeper, played for the Red Bulls under 23s, but didn't have that much coming out in North America. And he was like, all right, well, where do I go? So he went to Denmark, Danish second division, maybe even third division for a little bit. And now he starts for AC Horsens in the Danish Premier League.
Wow.
Right? And it's like, what USL teams or MLS teams were looking at him, and now he's starting in arguably a very real league in Europe that's like, okay, he's maybe, I don't know, 6 to 10 performances away from maybe a transfer to a big club in Europe, and had Bobby, Michael, very, very slim pickings coming out of college. And it's like, why? But at the same time, to answer your question, Scandinavia and maybe the smaller leagues in the UK. I think you guys go over there, bet on yourself, you grind it out, and why not me?
Yeah.
Dude, honestly, we have some fans in Northern Ireland, and actually we have a goalkeeping academy in Northern Ireland that's interested in us coming out there and doing a live show and a clinic and
Michael.
Stuff. And,
Yeah.
And he's got some great stuff. I've been watching his training videos and stuff.
Michael's solid. Yeah, I talk to him often.
Does some good stuff. So tell him to hit us up to let's make that happen.
Absolutely.
I want to go. I want to go. Don't you want to go?
I
want to
go.
Yeah.
No, as you should. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, once the world is allowing us to travel again, we would love to go.
Yeah, literally. For sure.
We would love to go. All right. So we're going to move on right here. I want to do a little bit of story time with you guys because Eric, you've got so many stories.
Right?
So we're going to start with Saskia first.
Oh gosh. A story. I was thinking about it, but is there,
Is there something to motivate you in a direction?
Okay, so here's the thing. I'll give you guys a little bit of direction here, okay?
Okay.
Since we've been talking about time overseas, I want each of one of us to share an experience from our time overseas, and it doesn't necessarily have to be on the field, that kind of shaped us today to the coach or player that we are today. So I'm going to start with Saskia.
A time overseas.
Yeah.
That shaped me.
Yeah. I've got some.
I have a funny story, but I like,
it doesn't have to be dramatic and like, you know, get everybody to start putting like little tier comments on here on the Facebook.
I mean, my entire experience in Japan, I mean, as a whole, whether it was, you know, riding my bike, like you said, to the train station or to the gym and to the bakery or wherever to go to Blockbuster to rent movies and,
Throwback. Blockbuster.
I know. Hey.
There's some kids on here who are not going to know what Blockbuster is.
Okay, Google it. Educate yourself.
Google what Blockbuster is.
You have plenty of time. Okay. Are there kids on this, so I can't tell that story?
Oh. It's something that shaped who you are as a coach or a player now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
keep that in mind. It's something that shaped you as a coach.
Oh, my God.
Oh man. God. I think I kind of told that story last time, but I think honestly, if you went through what I went through in Japan, as a whole, I was really getting pounded. We really weren't a good team. And, that first season, and just to kind of keep picking myself up and doing it. And like I said, I wasn't the kind of person that like, I wanted to be there. I wanted to like, experience the culture, the food, that like throw myself into that. But on the field, it was pretty brutal, and it was long practices, really bad games, and just as a goalkeeper, like, you know, 5-0, like the 9-0 game, like, and it was over and over again. Like when we finally won a game, it was unbelievable. But it was just sticking with that, keeping my head up, and knowing that I was there for a bigger role. I was there to get games and obviously a lot of saves and shots and the experience and to get myself ready for 99 and to get onto that 99 team, because I was the third goalkeeper in the 96 Olympics. So rolling and we had kind of like a pause. And so it was like, I had to get games. If I hadn't gone to Japan, if I hadn't done what I did, I wouldn't have been on the 99 team. Yeah. Because there was nothing going on here. I could stay in Jersey. I could go to Rutgers. I could train with the men like I always did, but that's training. Yeah. I'm, you know, the best damn training goalkeeper in the world, but you know, I need games.
Yeah.
So that whole experience and getting that in, but sticking with it would have been really easy for me to get totally hammered that first season. And by that, I don't mean when we went to Tokyo on the weekends after games. although great. Those are other stories for our after hours.
That's for the one with the E on the logo.
The rating.
The explicit content episode.
Yeah. So, I have some of those stories. So, so I went back. Like, I didn't have to go back after that first year. And I went back. I was there for 3 years. And we got better and better, and to watch my team get better and better with the same players. Maybe we switched out two foreign players. But other than that, and then to be in the middle top tier of the league, that was awesome. And to be a part of that and that growth. But for me, just to stick with it, not give up, and go from such a low level of quality to be a part of like that, you know, that was awesome. That shaped me 100% as a player.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a coach. Cause I look at my kids for my club and I'm just like, when, you know, club kids, they get pounded. You got a 5-0 kid and a goal too big for him and everybody just shoots high and boots it, you know? And you know, we don't play that style at the Bulls, but you know, I got to turn to my kids. I'm like, I've been there, you know, I've been there. It'll get, you know, just stick with it. It'll get better. We'll get better and everything. So absolutely. The whole experience.
I mean, honestly, that's actually a really good point that you brought up in regards to playing on a bigger goal than you're supposed to be playing on, because lack of resources is honestly something that I got from playing overseas. And honestly, I'm not gonna lie. I was, for lack of a better term, I'd been very spoiled by playing in the American youth system when I went to Venezuela. And well, actually, the way that actually happened that I ended up in Venezuela was I was actually there on vacation and started messing around with my cousins and stuff. And they're like, hey, they're like, you should play out here. I'm like, nah, that's a thing. Is that a thing? You can do that here? they're like, well, you have citizenship, right? I'm like, well, I was born here. They're like, oh, you can get a Venezuelan passport. You can play here over. Anyway, so this guy calls me. He's talking to me. He's like, yeah. He's like, we'll get it squared away. He's like, go over to this place. So I go to this address, right? This is in Venezuela again. I'm thinking American standpoint, right? So I'm thinking like, oh, I'm going to like a corporate building. There's going to be like some sort of like receptionist type of thing. I go, I'm like, I'm in some neighborhood. And like, there's just like a, like one of those like little metal fences, like in the front. I'm like, I'm at somebody's house. And like, they're like, yeah, I go inside. There's like some lady cooking. There's like kids watching TV.
Yeah,
they're like, mira, Alirio, el gringo está allá. And I'm like, hi. They're like, I go into some dude's like study, like his family room basically. And he's like going shuffling through papers and stuff. He's like, here, fill out this stuff. I'm like, oh, I am not in the United States in any way whatsoever. This does not look legitimate in any way whatsoever. So that's when I recognized that. And then I went to the field for the first time for the first training session. And what was considered the professional training field, like Eric, like you were talking about, and Saskia, you were talking about, dude, I wouldn't even see ASO kids playing on here. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's just some sort of like rodent animals, like whether it's a mole like, you know, I don't know. There's divots. Yeah. There's divots.
Patrick, I'm going to sign off.
But, all right, cool. Anyway, dude, I'm on the field there, and I go, and it's like, there's like graffiti on the walls, and there's like barbed wire, and I'm like, this is not...
Barbed wire? I had barbed wire, too.
Yeah, dude.
There was barbed wire everywhere.
And the thing is, but the barbed wire was to protect the people who were from... Because when the games happened, because we've trained on the same field that we actually played on. Like, there was no training field.
Yeah.
And what happened is basically is that like the barbed wire was there to make sure that like fans couldn't get on the field. And I'd never seen that before. That was like a new thing. I mean, it wasn't like, this wasn't like prison barbed wire. It wasn't like there was like, you know, snipers or something like that against the wall, but it was definitely an eye opening experience. And then like when I got on the field and we're starting to run and stuff, and I was like, I didn't want to dive because, like, the field, like, I was like, this is dangerous.
Rock solid.
Like,
was it?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Rock solid.
Yeah. And literally,
it is the same way.
And all the kids were just asking me, they're like, why are you here? Like, why are you doing this to yourself?
I got that question a couple of times in Israel, too. Why come to Israel? I don't understand.
And literally, all the kids, and I'm saying kids because it was actually technically the youth team, U20s or U21s or whatever you want, Subbendi, team. They were aspiring to try to play for the professional team. They're all like, how do I get to college in the United States? Like, that's all they wanted to know, how to get to the
literally
U.S.
Literally the opposite of what you were thinking.
Opposite, dude. And they're like, why are you here? And it shaped me as a coach in regards to the fact that it made me appreciate, you know, what I'd seen out there. And whenever kids started complaining, I started recognizing, I was like, okay, you know what? It's not that they're being rude or anything like that. They just don't know any better. So it made me understand it's more about conveying something in a way that they understand it and they'll grasp it rather than complaining and getting mad that they're not seeing it from my point of view. As a goalkeeper coach, it's our job to find a way to convey the information in a way that they get it and to be able to connect with them. Because that's what, I mean, you know, you're a goalkeeper coach. Like, connecting is a lot of what it's all about, you know?
Yeah, I think that kind of leads well into my story, because I think what I learned over in Israel in terms of how it shaped me as a goalkeeper, let's say, I've really figured out what I needed from my goalkeeper coach for me to feel like I could be successful on the field on a Saturday, if that makes sense. So I felt like there's a lot of good people over in Israel. There's so many good people. I think that maybe coach education is a little bit lower over there potentially. But really, my goalkeeper coach cared about me a lot, but wasn't really like a detail-oriented guy, and really wasn't somebody who was willing to change based on the goalkeeper that I was, but more just, I'll change for the goalkeeper coach that he was. So, for example, we would do a warm-up, like my same college warm-up that I did with my goalkeeper coach.
At Monmouth.
At Monmouth. And I was there for 7 months-ish, and he didn't remember what my warm-up was once.
You had to explain it to him, show him.
So I had to explain to him what was next, what was coming and if you can gather this kind of vibe for me, I'm a thinker, right? I'm like a guy that's like going to get in his own head. So like what I don't want to focus on pregame is what the warm-up needs to be. I need to zone in and focus on the game and that's it. So I've like really built this appreciation for not only a goalkeeper coach that, in my opinion, gets it, it's like a vague term, but somebody who not only cares enough about me to understand what I need, I just feel like having a goalkeeper coach, in my opinion, that understands who you are as a person and what you need to be successful from a psychological standpoint can make all the difference. And that's really made me appreciate the goalkeeper coaches that I have at TFC, and something that moving forward, whenever I do leave TFC, whenever that day comes, that I will prioritize much more than I did beforehand. Right. And then at the same time, as a goalkeeper coach, really understanding that goalkeeper coach to goalkeeper relationship needs to be spot on, because it can make all the difference in terms of being effective on a Saturday.
Dude, I think you brought up a really good point that I think a lot of kids out there are really afraid to communicate with their goalkeeper coaches. And I don't even mean kids as in like younger kids. I mean older keepers that don't understand that, like, if you don't communicate what you're looking for from your goalkeeper coach, they don't know how to guide you.
But at the same time, the goalkeeper coach is in control of the environment for a lot of it. So are you building an environment where they feel comfortable to speak?
Very true. That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I try to build a comfortable environment. I always try to get my goalkeepers to ask questions, you know, and I try to get them to see my whole philosophy when it comes to goalkeeper coaching is I want independent goalkeepers. I don't want dependent goalkeepers, because the thing is that when you're on the field, it's your job to make decisions without somebody else telling you what to do. You can't micromanage a goalkeeper in the game. That's what makes guys like Jan Oblak or Allison Becker so high level, because they don't second guess their decisions. They make a decision and they go with it, and they're so calm and collective with it that I think, you know, to me, that's more goalkeeping than when you watch the, and I'm just using David De Gea as an example. I'm not saying David De Gea is a bad goalkeeper or whatever, but you know, I consider him more of a reactive goalkeeper than an anticipatory goalkeeper. I consider Allison Becker more of a preventative goalkeeper, which I've talked with Tim Dittmer, you know, at the FA about, which is what I think you really want to teach your goalkeepers to become. And the only way you can do that is to allow your goalkeepers to communicate with you and to make mistakes, and then discuss those mistakes with them and let them learn from the mistakes rather than trying to micromanage a session. You can't try to run the session because you want it to be a certain way. And if the picture doesn't look that way, get really frustrated. Because as a younger goalkeeper coach, that was me. I'd get I'm like, Mal, come on, man. That's not what it's supposed to look like. And it's like, well, is this about me or is it about them?
Yeah, exactly. And I said this on Camp Shutouts live Instagram thing that I was on last week. I want to build goalkeepers that are really conscious of their own mistakes, right? So what I was saying is like, I need a goalkeeper, or I want to build a goalkeeper that when they do make a mistake, they're thoughtful enough and they're a student of the game enough to, when they make that mistake, they have ideas about how they can correct that mistake immediately. I need people who are actively thinking about how to correct their own mistakes. Because if you are and you're conscious of your own development, it's going to be so much easier for you to get better, because you understand the game at a way. So in my own position, and most professional goalkeepers, when we make a mistake and we concede a goal, more often than not, we have like two or three ideas about how to prevent that or how to correct that, right? And I think I need my goalkeeper coach to bounce those ideas off and say, hey, what if I did this? What if I took a step back? What do you think? Do you think I need to take a step higher or something like that? Maybe my hands were too low, whatever it is. But you need thoughtful goalkeepers that are conscious of their own mistakes. Because if you are conscious of your mistakes, then you can actually make use of them.
Yeah. And I think another really good point that I want to make in regards to that, what you were talking about as being a pro, is for kids out there listening, that when you concede a goal, don't just look about the situation prior to the goal, what you could have done. Look a couple steps back behind before that. Because a lot of times the mistake, for lack of a better term, mistake or not the best decision, came a couple steps prior to the actual shot on goal.
For sure. Yeah. Whether, can you put out fires?
Man, I'm starting to lose my voice here, dude.
It's the bronchitis.
It is the bronchitis, dude. And I told that story on a comedy show last night from New York City. Actually, it was in from North Carolina. That's the best thing about this right now. Is like I'm doing shows all over the world. I've got a show in Denmark tomorrow night.
Do you really?
By tomorrow night. I mean at noon. L.A. time. I'm doing a show live from Denmark. But I had a pretty big freak out experience where I thought I had COVID-19. So it was a... It turned out to be a panic attack. Apparently that's how your throat can close up and you start having chest pains and think that you can't breathe is when you watch too much CNN. That happens too.
There you go. Yeah. Wild times. We're living in uncharted territory.
I know. I'd rather just stay on this Facebook Live right now than ever. By the way, I don't know about you, but not having sports on as background noise is really difficult for me. It's so weird. Cause I'm like, what do I put on? Like, what do I put on in the background? I don't want the news on. That's depressing. Do I put Netflix on in the background? But then I have to watch it.
And then you just end up at Inside the 18 podcast and you're listening to it while you're making dinner.
And that's what you guys need to do. Go out there, listen to all the old podcasts, go on ProGK Academy, watch those training videos that Omar put up on YouTube and on the Instagram channel. Go on all these Instagram lives. Dude, Eric, you should start your own live thing during this time. You got the time. You might as well, dude.
Yeah, but it's like oversaturated, right? Everybody does it.
It's kind of annoying because I'm like, oh, great. Well, now I'm nothing special.
I need to like create a schedule. Like I got Tim Dittmer with ProGK Academy at 10. I got to go to Stands after that. I got Inside the 18.
It's like a training schedule.
Make a schedule. Honestly, I don't know about anybody else, any other goalkeepers or goalkeeper coaches, but I feel like, you know, I haven't trained on the field in like 2 weeks. I haven't coached in so long, but I feel like I'm becoming a better goalkeeper and a better coach right now because there's just so much information and you're getting, it's like information overload. And like, I took so many ideas from every single one of these live things.
Oh yeah. No, dude, it's amazing. And honestly, I haven't done any, I got sick on March 13th and I literally, because I got the bronchitis, they didn't want me doing anything really physical for a while. For sure. I've not done any fitness work.
Oh,
I was
going
to try to start today for 2 weeks and I'm losing my mind. Cause I need to start doing something, but the problem is all the gyms are closed.
Solve problems. Don't make excuses.
I know you're right.
Come on,
thank you.
We're preaching. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right.
Be a problem solver.
I'm such a hypocrite here. My brother-in-law said, he's like, you know how many training things you can just do just standing in place? And I'm like, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Literally.
I'm not going to make excuses. I'm going to go take a pre-workout right now. I'm going to start warming up, get all that going. Eric, if anybody out there wants to reach out to you, if there's any kids out there that are looking for advice, or anybody that wants to know more about your goalkeeper training programs that are going on as well too, where's the best place for people to reach out to you?
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Eric Klonofsky. And then my Instagram for my coaching page is EK Soccer Training if you guys are interested. But yeah, by all means, reach out. Happy to talk shop.
Yeah. And then, is it all just goalkeeper training or is it also other types of training as well too on that EK soccer training?
EK soccer training is also, I mean, it's mostly goalkeeper training. I didn't want to limit myself, so I made it soccer.
Striker training.
Just in case I wanted to, you know, I gotta be adaptable. You gotta be adaptable. But no, I actually just started, a podcast that talks about the mentality of what it takes to be a professional athlete, not really goalkeeper specific, but,
plug that. What's that?
Yeah. Let's Talk More Work podcast. Me and one of my best friends, Josel Mateo, he owns Crank Sports Performance. So we talk about athlete identity and, kind of like the mental aspect of going abroad, dealing with injuries, all that kind of stuff.
Dude, that's awesome. That's awesome to hear that. So. Oh my gosh. Okay. Geez. Okay. All right. Remember, contact at insidethe18media.com if you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion. Dude, honestly, if you have something that you feel would be right for this show. That's how Eric got on the show. He reached out. He's like, dude, he's like, I think I got some stuff that that your audience might want to hear about. You know, let's get on the show.
Made me sound really narcissistic.
No, but dude, there's honestly a lot of people that listen to the show. Sometimes they think, oh, I mean, I've had college kids reach out and be like, I don't know if I'm big enough to be on your show and everything. And I'm like, dude, it has nothing to do with like your level of play or coaching or whatever. It's like, can you give back to the community? Is there something of relevance that you can add value? You know, that's what's important right now. So, and we all need that, you know. That being said, Eric's a big deal. So, you know, we're never going to turn him down.
I'm just some guy.
All right, guys. That's all the time on Inside the 18. This podcast will be out on all the different platforms on Friday. So we're out. feel free to check out this Facebook Live and share it. iTunes reviews, guys. Keep them coming. We're out. Later.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Lefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.